After he gives the interpretation, at that point he makes the request. Now, let's analyze that. What would you have done if you were in that situation? Is that the time to make the request? Now? I mean, there's another. I mean, the other time is after the 3 days go by, and then the news comes. But and the question is like this. It just strikes me as strange that normally, I would think that normally you give the interpretation first. And then, when it, because it's at that point in time, I'm not sure, do you think that the question is, at this point in time, is the butler convinced that this is true? How does he know that Yosef knows what he's talking about? How does he know? He doesn't know. Yosef doesn't have a reputation. Okay, so he's still in a state of suspense. So therefore, I'm just pointing it out. Therefore, if you're in that situation, you tell a person, let's say it doesn't have to be through prophecy, you can just figure out the situation. You give him some advice, and you tell him, if you follow this advice, you know, this is what's going to happen in 3 days. So at that point in time, I would imagine that the person you're talking to is still has some doubt. Then when it comes true, he feels really, it's amazing, I can't believe it, how do you know? Then, right? So then, when he's feeling that emotion of gratitude, I would think that is a good time to, when he's feeling the emotion of gratitude. The point is, when do you ask the person for a request? Is it when you give him the advice, but still he's not, it's not clear to him yet that it's going to work? When does the person feel the gratitude to a doctor? When the person tells him what to do, takes the cure, the prescription? He doesn't know, you don't know, you're hoping it'll work. Then if it works out and solves all your problems, he's a genius. Then you feel gratitude. The question is, on the star ha'ofen. If the star ha'ofen did not tell him his dream right away, it says Tzayin that the star ha'ofen, the baker, the one who's in charge of the bakers, he only, because he thought he told Pasa that he interpreted it for the good, then he told his dream to Yosef. Okay? So you're asking, why does he have to mention that he saw that he interpreted it for the good? I mean, what does that do with it? That's your question, right? I would say like this, that I would say, clearly, before the interpretation, the Tzar Hamashkin, the butler, was in a state of distress. Alright? The dream troubled him. And in fact, he was in general in a state of, distress because he was in jail. You know, he did not know what happened, even though he was, even though he was innocent. You never know what's going to happen. Now, when Yosef told him the interpretation, what do you think happened? That suddenly he was jumping for joy, he was riding home. I'm going to be home in 2 days. Do you think so? What was the effect? Now, there was some effect because obviously Yosef must have made some impression. Because first of all, why would he even tell a dream as a personal thing? He confided in Yosef. Why would he even tell him in the first place? And then you say, why did the other person, the baker, why did he confide his dream? That's because it's what he told Pasher. So what? How do you know that it doesn't prove anything? It's a nice prediction. That's a good question. Why did he, in the first place, why did he, see Paro, we understand why Paro tells his dream to Yosef. That's because he comes with a recommendation. He came very highly recommended for dream interpretation. This is not an insignificant point, because these are powerful people. The Ramban asked the question, and that why did Yosef take such an enormous risk? He put himself in great danger over here by saying these things, because he says, with regard to the butler, he really wasn't at risk, because if it came true, it was good. That they could even say, if you think about this, if you just had this one case of the butler, so then it doesn't really necessarily prove that much. Because what does it hurt me to give a good interpretation? If it comes out for the good, so then I'm a winner. Right? If it comes out for the bad, he's dead. He can't harm me.
Right.
So it's more of a safe, right? It's a safe situation. So really, there's no question. It's not such a strong question on that. Although it is. I mean, first of all, Yosef wouldn't do. He would still be hurting his reputation. But all right, whatever. That's something he could defend. He could say afterwards that. I didn't want him, you know, he had 3 days to live, and he was very depressed, and whatever. But with regard to the baker, they're taking a huge risk. That's a huge risk. That shows, see, the first case doesn't show that he had complete confidence in what he was doing, because, you know, you're giving the illustration, the person can take that kind of chance. But with regard to the baker, he's taking a huge risk. Because he said, what if it turns out that you're wrong? Hey, you're telling me, man, because for the next 3 days, it's going to be an agony. Looking forward to execution. You had been. Alright? Now, if it should turn out that he was wrong, so the natural reaction would be to really turn against the other. Even though you'll say, even though a person can say, well, why didn't this come in the first place? It doesn't matter. That's precisely the point. That's part of the Ramban. Why is the Ramban saying that if he'd been wrong, I mean, on the baker, the baker would have killed him. So let's analyze that. Why would the baker kill him? The baker should be happy that he was wrong. And why would he want to kill him? Why would he be so angry? That's what Ramban says, though. He makes an important point, because this shows that Yosef had reached the point of complete maturity. He was completely batuach b'chokhmas muscle. That this was the point at which he had reached his ultimate perfection. That was part of the purpose of being imprisoned. So, how does it show it? Why is Ramban so sure that the baker would have killed him had he been wrong in the interpretation? Then he told him he's going to be executed, and turns out not. So he has 3 bad days. The answer is because then, why? What would happen? It's a psychological point. I've been making a very good point. There are 2 points over here, because, first of all, logically, if you ask the person, why? Well, let's say this is what happens. Somebody gives you a very bad interpretation of the dream, so something terrible is going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. Okay, so then you get very angry, and then you say, you put me through this grief. And I'll say to him, what do you mean you put me through this grief? Why did you believe in the first place? You shouldn't believe him. It's your fault. Why did you believe the guy? So the point is, you're right. The person is really angry now that he believed him. But he's really angry with himself. Rather than be angry when a person doesn't want to admit that he was stupid for believing him. Believe me, I'll put the blame on you. You know, you convinced me. That's in today's society. Today's society is very few people want to accept responsibility. He's always blaming somebody else. Yeah. But still you have to say what Ben is saying. Because why would there be a need to kill this person? To execute revenge against him? Which he's just saying, he made a prediction and a mistake about objective forces. It's going to be a hurricane. And the hurricane didn't come. The answer is that this is not the same thing. The answer is that a person in that situation would take it as a personal affront. When somebody predicts that you're going to have a tremendous downfall, so it's very rare that the other person would say, "Well, that's just his understanding. He's objective." You would always take it as something you're saying. You're saying I'm a nobody. In other words, all these guys operate on the basis of ego. So the fact that, that's what keeps them going. They have a certain irrational sense that they're going to come out on top. Boy, all these guys have tremendous, downfalls in politics and so on and so forth. You know, like these guys that are close to the president, whatever, president himself. They do a lot of crazy things. They have this irrational sense they're above the law. So then, when someone says, you're doing something crazy, you're gonna get caught for that. You see, so that's an assault on their narcissism. We're saying the guy's saying that I'm not special. Now, when you tell the Sarah open, whatever he did something wrong. He assumed he'd get away with it, whatever it was, because he's very special, very important. Now, Yosef was telling him that it's not, you're gonna get caught, you're gonna get executed. You're nobody. He basically was telling. If I was telling him that he's a nobody, then if it turned out that he was wrong, he'd have to go to bed. Then he'd have to go to bed. Because Yosef's got him a nobody. You see? So that's why Ramban is justified in saying that when young Yosef understood psychology, he knew so well that if he was wrong, he'd be putting himself at risk. So really, what's the point of doing all this? There's no gain in the second interpretation. In the first interpretation, you can make a fool out of yourself. You can make it, if people knew about it and all that, you can make a fool out of yourself. But there, he said, you can always explain it, and there's no one that's going to be angry at him. He cheered him up. He said, I saw that he couldn't tolerate the idea. He was afraid he was going to get killed. I cheered him up for the last year. I would say the question is why they confided in Yosef. Why do they think that Yosef might help them? All right, so Yosef did say hello, Lelo Kim to Thronim, that there are interpreters and so forth. Well, he did confirm. Apparently, they were convinced that this dream was not a normal dream. This point came in the future. They believed that, but they weren't satisfied. Nobody can explain it to them. Then, when Yosef said that God does have people who interpret, can interpret the dreams, let's put it this way. They were desperate. And I guess he seemed to be an intelligent individual. I'm sure that you could say this, that they were impressed that he wasn't stupid. He wasn't just, an ordinary criminal who was in jail. They must have seen that he was an intelligent person. So they took a chance. Okay, let's get back to our point though. The question that we raised was that, because we're dealing with the question of why Chazal criticized the Yosef. Ramban answers that question. Ramban says that even though he took a great risk, but he was completely confident in terms of his Chachma. It's Batuch de Chachmaso. But that means to say that he had confidence, but the confidence was based upon the reality. It's a very important point. I mean, you see, that a person, that is the state of perfection, the person is not living in fantasy. Most people are living in some type of fantasy, not in line with reality. Either they're lacking in confidence, okay? They have fear, they're always talking about a certain emotion of fear. Or they have overconfidence, they have a crazy confidence. The confidence is a certain innate feeling of being me. Most people, the confidence that they have comes first. In other words, they have a certain feeling of being super and special, and that may motivate them to really, up to a point, it motivates them to work hard, and to, because they can't justify it, unless it's based on some reality, so they'll work hard. But the problem is that at a certain point in time, it'll become harmful, because once they achieve a certain type of success, so they can justify the feeling with some kind of reality, they're a great doctor or whatever, a great businessman. So then, at that point, you see that this tremendous egotism comes out. A lot of people are very successful in a specific area, field. Suddenly they're giving advice on everything in the world. People interview people, even people that are. In sports, they start asking what kind of people say, well, you qualified to discuss these issues. But the person becomes successful in sports, which has nothing to do with their intellect. And they're going to be interviewed, they're stars, and they're asking one other opinion about politics, about life, and so on and so forth. It becomes ridiculous. But certainly, people that are successful in one area, in business or whatever the case may be, they're making money is usually the big thing. So then everybody wants to know their opinions on every subject in the world. And these people don't answer and say, that's not my field. I just made some money. That's the truth. So there's an overestimation of the self. But Yosef may have partaken in that, by the way, as well. That's the whole, you see that what he was saying. That's what the Chumash does say about Yosef. That Yosef, too, in spite of his greatness, he also partook of that emotion, and that he had to overcome that emotion. That's the reason for the Mashira. It was a complete breakdown of his ego and so forth. That's what the Ramban says, that at that point in time in jail, he reached that level where he was batuach to chachmasa. And that is to say that he had total confidence. But now we have to ask another question. In other words, the question is the risk, The answer is yes, he took a risk, but he had complete confidence in what he was doing, but the confidence was based upon his understanding of the reality. It wasn't because of a crazy sense of his own greatness. Then it would be a problem. In a similar fashion, I mean, we can take it up separately, but you see, I always ask the question on David. If David, when he comes to Shaul, to find Goliath, so he tells him about the incident, because at first Shaul takes a look at him. You see that from there, that no one was going to rely on miracles. Not allowed to rely on miracles. The way it appeared, they didn't have anybody that could match Goliath. It wasn't because they were afraid. Because you see that Yonatan, Shaul, they were tremendous warriors. Like Gibor, there's no question about it. It's a good story to go through. And what's going on? They were paralyzed by their Goliath, but they were afraid of what? What were they afraid of? They were afraid of, no, even if you say that he would kill them. I mean, they went out to battle. They were Yonatan in the middle of the night, he attacked the enemy camp. I mean, they were Gibor. They were they had overcome their fear of death. I mean, if it was necessary to go out and fight Goliath, so they fight Goliath. Ah, you see that Shaul went out to battle, he knew that he was going to be killed. By the way, he knew that he was going to die on that last day. He wasn't afraid of death. But the point is that you have to operate in a rational way. It would be a tremendous to go out there against Goliath, and he would win, and he was maintaining that this would indicate that that there was no God. He was involved in desecration of God's name. He was making the whole point that God is not in the camp of the Jews. So therefore the Jews have to fight back, but they have to have someone that had the capacity to fight against them. You can't just send anybody. That's why when David came forth, Hashem took a look at him. He didn't look, like a warrior. And, well, crazy, right? He sent him out there just because he's willing to kill himself. We're not looking for a kamikaze over here. So David told him about the incident with the two cases where one case of bear, one case of lion, had, he was a shepherd, had stolen a sheep, and he chased after it. And he said he chased after the lion, and he grabbed onto the beard of the lion, and he said, I smote the lion, I also smote the bear, your servant too. And I'll smite this person too. And it's a funny story. It's an interesting story. But I always ask the question, is that why, it sounds a little crazy, I mean, why would a person chase after a lion to save a sheep? And put himself at risk, it's a kind of professional. You know what I mean? It's just one sheep. You take a walk in that case. Especially, you don't attack a lion, especially you don't attack an animal when it has its prey. Try and pull a bone out of a dog's mouth, and that's for itself, even a calm one. So I also say to this case that David HaMelech was too afraid. But to him, he was not. I mean, the thing is like this, there's two different kinds, get back to the point we were talking about, there's two different kinds of satana. There's the recklessness, and then there's putting yourself in a situation where, of course, if there is a possibility of dying, but you have the complete knowledge and confidence that you won't, like on an airplane. An airplane is satana. Once you're in the air, it's satana. So then how are we allowed to go on an airplane? How are we allowed to put yourself in satana? The answer is that's not putting yourself in satana, because you know what you're doing. Assuming you're the pilot, the plane, etc. So in most cases, the mere fact that there's a possibility of dying doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that you're not allowed to just make your life after. Put yourself in a crazy risk situation and hope that you'll be okay. So I would say for David, that was what he was doing. He was confident about his life. It wasn't a crazy thing. But the question arises, why did Yosef have to tell him all to go? Why do you have to put the guy in the state of pain? For 3 days. Yeah, why did he care altogether? It's not clear. Well, in other words, originally, what was the original motive? It's not after the fact, he tried to use it to get out of jail. But the question is that why he interpreted it to begin with? Why did he have to interpret the Jews altogether? The question is, one Jew's butt out. What was his purpose? But all right. So with regard to the Saramashkin, so okay. He gained something. But with regard to the Saraopen, yeah. Take a look. They came together. It wasn't just that each guy had a dream and each guy was troubled individually. It was one dream. That was like what made it a very strange phenomenon. It was the same dream. Otherwise, why take a look at the prison? By Yom Rei Lav, he said they were both miserable. Oh, some. It's like one group. By Yachavu Chalom Shineam, Ish Chalomo, the lilac, right? Right? By Yavalim, by Yishal, and he said, by Yomar, Chalom Chalamu, the Toser Einosa, one Chalom. Okay? Then, each guy had a dream. The dream was quite identical. He committed himself to interpreting the dream. That's what he said. However, what came to his own. If the two dreams are connected, so then once he offered to interpret the dream, now things like this, though, I would say, whatever the case is, whether there's a, whether you want to call it one dream or not, the real question is, why did Yosef offer to interpret the dream? Once he offered to interpret the dream, so then you can't ask the question, why did he interpret the dream of the Sarah? What's he supposed to tell him? He didn't know in advance. He didn't have a nevuah as to what the dream. He had to listen to the dream and then give the interpretation. So he offered to interpret the dream. He could ask, why did he offer to interpret the dream? Now, then you could also ask, once he knew the interpretation, why did he put himself at risk? He could have put back up. Okay? How do you get that? Because he has, there's two questions. First of all, why did you have to interpret all together? What was the purpose?
Yeah.
Okay. But that doesn't have the difficult things to understand. He wanted to be helpful. Person, I mean, you would assume that he's in jail, that, he's trying to do anything he can to help himself inside, but Yosef was a man of chesed, he would help somebody else. You don't have to assume that every movie made was just to get himself out of jail. I mean, he was a man of chesed, a man of chesed, and he saw a person in pain, and initially, why wouldn't he help him? I don't think that he knew at that point that this would be the way he would get out of jail.
There's potential benefit, but
even if there wasn't, first of all, they were kin to Tron. He's always spreading the word of God. I mean, the fact of the matter is that it's also a possible way to influence a person in terms of God. Alright, so let's assume that that's the case. Then he hears the dream of the butler, and he sees that it's good, that he's going to be saved. So then he tells him. Then he hears the dream of the baker, and he sees that it's negative. Right? But he's going to be killed in 3 days. So at that point in time, we can ask ourselves why he saw the option. He could have told him he's not sure. And so, of course, Ramban says he was betrothed for 6 months. He had no doubt that this is what's going to happen. But what's the question? From a practical standpoint, why is he telling me? So, the question we're focusing on
one question,
yeah. I think there was some connection between the dreams. I mean, see, Rashi indicates that his dream, and the phenomenon that they both dreamed the dream, all this apparently has to do with Hashgacha. Let's put it this way. If you take a look at the bigger picture, and we ask ourselves, was this just an accident that these two people were imprisoned at that time? Let's take a look at the broader picture. Let's step back now. Let's look at a wider array. Was this just an accident that happened at this time? I would. The Torah says that suddenly he's in jail, and then Bahiyachad Vamel, the Chotu Mashkin al Fatran di Ofer, Ladonim al Fatran. Okay? Bahiyachad Paro. The fact that at that point in time, both of them committed mistakes, sinned against Paro. Right? And both of them were thrown to jail. And both of them happened to be employed in the same cell, same area, division where Yosef was. And then they both had a dream. Now a dream, by the way, what kind of a dream was this? Was this an ordinary dream, or was this a dream which put such a prophecy? I would say that I would like this. The fact that they had this dream, even if you maintain that Yosef was able to decipher what was going to happen on the basis of the dream, okay, which is not that easy, because all you can decipher, you can have a pretty fair idea as to who's guilty and who's innocent. That applies, you know, a person's very insightful in dream interpretation. But to say that you can predict future events, that's only if the dream partakes of prophecy, seems to me. I don't see how you can know and figure out, you don't know. I mean, certainly you're not going to put your life on the line, like Ramban says, that in 3 days, maybe the investigation will take a week, so it's his birthday. I don't know. I mean, how do you know? For sure. No matter what you want to say, the fact that they had that dream at that time, okay, clearly in that dark. That wasn't an accident. And it was clearly designed for the purpose of Hashkara. God, of course, is in control of the entire situation. It was clearly designed to provide Yosef with the opportunity to interpret it, and thereby to come. That is the way the Hashkara worked it out, that that Yosef would come to the attention of Pharaoh to interpret his dream from the time game. Great question. Getting back to the main point as to why his efforts failed, it says Vayishka failed. Rachamu Tam. It may. Well, it's interesting. Take a look at Rashi, the entire Chasim Velo Zachasar Mashkin Bo Bayom. And he didn't remember him that day. I would say that we didn't remember. He didn't remember him that day. He didn't mention him. He didn't take care of it that day. All right, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense. He didn't remember. He forgot about it in one day. Which has Lo Zachasar Mashkin as Yosef? Yeah. And then what he used to say, it was even further. He drove the whole thing out of his mind. Hey, it was more of a positive thing. Velo zachar was, you know, some, you know, you have a chore to take care of, so you don't think about it for a while to get it. Then it comes back to you, and you do it. Right? So vayish kacheyu means you're never going to get back to it. You know, you just push it out of your mind. Same with Ripshah too. Yeah, I feel above you. Even at the time when the emotion would be, good point, even at the time when the emotion would be most powerful, when you expect him to remember him, he didn't remember him. That's velo zachar. In the time frame of Zachar. And then Vayishkacheu the Achamitan means after that. The Nesha Tola about Yosef or Zachro. Now Rashi gives an explanation. Okay, because Yosef depended upon him to remember Huskak Rios Asur Shteshan. It was necessary for him to be in prison for 2 years. Shenemar Ashrei HaGever Asher Samar Hashem is Tacho Lopana El Rahavim. Okay. Fortunate is the person who is trusted in God and doesn't turn to idols. Lobatach Al Mitzrayim Hakuyim Rahav. Earth essentially means that idolatry, so he put his, it's an idolatry type of thing, he put his faith in a person. That's what it means. He put his faith in people of power, position. So that's a form of idolatry. But of course the classical question is that to the kind of thing, you see that a person is obligated to take measures. There's no contradiction. We don't believe that there's any contradiction between the two. But the type of faith we have in God demands that we sit back and do nothing. In fact, it's just, you see, first of all, you see by Yaakov Avinu, and you know, in all of the cases of the Torah, that everybody did as much as they could. Then they must follow that God should help them You can only do the power to God to help you if you're involved in trying to change the situation yourself. So it seems that the Yosef was taking advantage of an opportunity that came his way. In fact, if he had not done so, it would seem, if he would not have done everything to get out of jail, we would have had a question. So this is a very troubling Rashi. Why is this case different than all the other cases where we're obligated, by the contrary, we're obligated to do whatever we can. And then we pray to God. What did Avram do when there was a famine there? He went down to the crime, in spite of the great dangers and everything. He didn't sit back and come on it. So this is a very, very, very difficult lesson. Okay. So focusing now on Pasuk Kavod. On Pasuk Kavod. Max wants to say that your dollar makes sense to make the request. But why does he have to go into saying to Juno, do not be married to Ivan? The Gampolo is teaching the Ummah. In other words, it seems as though he's expecting the Sa'ar HaOfim to correct that injustice, which is not relevant. In other words, Max wants to claim that Pasuk is the problem, and that Pasuk is not relevant. Okay. Well, is that really true? Does that Pasuk therefore like stand out? It's just not fitting, not making sense? Analyze it. I agree. The first impression it makes on you is that it makes sense because it makes emotional sense. On the emotional level, it seems to make, it's a natural reaction. Right? Wouldn't you, if you're in that situation, so then you're appealing to him, and when you appeal to him, you want to strengthen your appeal. You want to communicate to him that you're innocent. That you're an innocent person. So you're saying like this. In other words, what's he going to, even if he does a big favor, if the guy's a murderer, he's a serial killer, and he gives him a big favor, how's he going to get him out of jail? So if he's going to make the request to him, doesn't he have to say that he's innocent?
Yeah.
So you guys are maintaining like this. That he should have just limited what he said. Sometimes a person says too much. That's a very, very important Musa Haskell of it. Especially when you're innocent. If a person isn't innocent, then he's a victim. But then he has a need. And you see how people overstate their case sometimes. It happens a lot. I mean, you see in all walks of life, or even in the dorm, you guys have a different. Every person overstates his case. I say, it goes back 25 steps. You see, like, it's not even relevant. It's not necessary. It goes all the way back, like he's trying to show everything that he did. You guys are only complaining about the Juno being asked to ask friends. But he had to say, you're saying, he had to say the polo or teaching Uma. That was necessary. He had to say that here he didn't do anything. Otherwise, if he was guilty, what you guys are saying is, then he has no basis. Even if he's in a favor, but if you're guilty, you're guilty. I mean, you can't ask a person to take you out of jail if you're guilty just because you did the guy a favor. And then Max is saying that you never been out there and it's too much. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but why is that? Is that explaining the Rashi then? David is saying that. And you know, if you're not being married to him, he's appealing to his sympathy. But David's saying it makes sense though. Because he's appealing to his sympathy. in other words, if this person, it's true, it may not be relevant to the particular case, but when you make an appeal, if there's another basis for sympathy, you tap into that. So he's saying he's appealing to his sympathy. Have a little rachman or something. I've had a tough life. And therefore, while he's agreeing with you, Max, that it's not necessary to the case, but it's relevant to the guy that you're working with. You can win a guy over on different bases, then it makes sense to do so. Yeah, Yosef couldn't know whether he'd be successful with it. You're right. If the guy, it says that he forgot him. Right? Why did he forget him? That's another good question. Why did he forget him? But if the guy is simply a base person, so then of course he's not going to help. Yosef didn't know for sure that he would help him. But he assumed that normally a person for whom you did a tremendous favor, and obviously this was a tremendous favor, because this dream would be, he was very in a state of suffering, and Yosef alleviated it. So then Yosef felt that there was a good chance that he became the favor. So all Yosef did was to try and take advantage. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It doesn't seem to us to be such a terrible thing. If the person is a decent person, so then he'll respond, he'll remember the favor. And then, if that's the case, so why not try to elicit some more sympathy from him because of the fact that you're a victim, you know? On the other hand, if the guy's a base individual, so nothing will work. And Yosef lost, but that doesn't mean that Yosef was wrong for trying. You know, the problem is that Yosef is being criticized for making this very appeal, and this seems to be contrary to the principles of Torah. He should make the appeal. You should use every method at your disposal. You shouldn't rely on miracles. And here he's criticized for relying on the Tzar Ha'ozim. So, it's so much a pleasure to understand. It makes an interesting distinction between the one thing to tell him that John told Lord Kishin Ruwa. I didn't do anything here. I'm innocent. It's another thing to have to go back that you were stolen from, to get kidnapped and whatever. What do you have to bring that in for? That's like a, irrelevant to the case. But David wants to say that it may be irrelevant, but if he wants to elicit a certain sympathy, because if he has more sympathy, then he's more apt to help him. Does a person have a right to elicit somebody else's sympathy to help him? I don't think one
has. No, they
have. The thing is like this. It's not, we can't go into philosophically why that should elicit somebody that doesn't, but it does work. Unless you maintain that it doesn't work. But the other thing, no psychology. Human psychology, there is a certain thing of a victim. You understand, simply this poor guy is a victim. That comes to your house with a sailor. Usually a guy comes to your house, he's got a tale of woes. From day one. And then, of course, it's sometimes it's too much. It's out of hand. I think also he's saying it, by the way, it's not altogether unconnected. There is a connection between the two points. In that, it does strengthen the point that the Gam Tolo teaching the Umo. In other words, that over here I was treated unjustly because I'm basically someone who's a stranger. I have no protection. In other words, it does help to explain how does it come about that you're in jail and you're doing it. Every convict believes that he's innocent. He's going to try and convince that he's innocent. Everyone will. So it's not altogether irrelevant. In other words, he's saying that I'm basically someone without any position. I was stolen, this and I was here. I have no one to protect me. And here, too, I didn't do anything, but due to my circumstances, I'm a victim of an injustice. So it's not completely unconnected. It does strengthen the case. But the question, I think that Yosef has to be concerned is that even if the guy wants to help you, but if you're guilty, you're guilty. How much can I do? He's trying to explain to him that this whole thing is a misunderstanding. And how did it come about? Because I'm stolen from a foreign land, so I have no protection over here. So therefore, I'm prone to injustice. Who suffers injustice? The weak, usually. Not only the people that don't have protection. This is from the essay. You guys write it, show. All right. He says that the quotes Rashi, since Joseph placed faith in him to remember him to Paro, he was destined to be incarcerated for 2 years. Then he quotes the Yerushalmi, which elaborates on this. Joseph abandoned the heavenly kindness that accompanied him from the house of his father and placed his trust in the chief steward in created flesh. Flesh that tastes of death, that is, that experiences death. And he didn't remember the passage that states and explains, cursed shall be the man that relies upon flesh and makes flesh his stronghold. So there's that for Haman. Okay, that's the reliance on a man. And blessed shall be the man that places his trust in Hashem, the Word of God, and the Word of God shall be his stronghold. On account of this, the chief steward did not remember Joseph and he forgot him until his time came to be redeemed. Okay. Then, of course, he goes on to say that this is a reference to the words of Yosef, the request. Right? It was apparently considered sinful by the rabbis that Joseph, after interpreting the dream of the chief baker and chief steward, to plead with the chief butler to remember him to Pharaoh. We are stymied by the words of our rabbis. What did Joseph do wrong? Doesn't the Torah teach us that we should make use of all available means to bring about for himself beneficial results? Is it anathema to ask another human being for help when in need? Didn't Jacob prepare an elaborate present to appease his brother Esau? Didn't Esther use her psychological insights to manipulate the emotions of the king? Did she not even fall at his feet crying and pleading? All of which she was praised for, being considered the savior of Israel. Get it back to Max's point. That case does show that she was crying and pleading, and she didn't just stick to the justice and the injustice. She tried to appeal to his yeah, because it's a very high level person that can relate to injustice on the abstract level. Most people are, but can relate to it on a certain emotional level. They can relate to it on a certain emotional level, so that's good too. Why then should Joseph have been condemned when he used, it would seem, the most natural method of procuring his freedom via the chief butler? Surely political savvy is not reviled by Torah. It is not viewed as a denial of one's faith in God. The words of the rabbis have deep meaning, and we cannot comprehend them by a simple glance. Just look more closely at the account of Joseph. We must ask one question. What did Joseph do wrong in placing his request before the chief butler? More correctly, what should he have done? What alternative method should he have used? The answer comes slowly but clearly. He should have done nothing. He erred politically. Joseph had completed the interpretation of the two dreamers who were with him in prison. His interpretation convinced them that he was correct. In a few days, reality would corroborate his interpretation with exactitude. The chief butler would walk away, dazzled by this amazing man, who via interpretation could foresee future events. Joseph would have left an indelible impression upon him. And at the first available opportunity, he would tell his master Pharaoh of the unbelievable wonder he had witnessed while incarcerated, in order to further ingratiate himself to his master. What prevented him from doing so? Only one thing, Joseph's request. As I say, saying that if he said nothing, then he definitely would have remembered it. The Lo Zachar is related to the request. But of course, that seems to be totally contrary to our intuition. It's just the opposite. If he didn't ask him, then there's nothing to remember, nothing to forget. Right? Okay, but let's continue. The rabbis tell us that a scholar is held in the highest esteem in the eyes of an ignoramus until the former tries to benefit from him. It is a matter of human nature that when one sees another person in need and asks him for assistance, one's estimation of that person is seriously compromised, whether rightfully or wrongfully. Let's stop and analyze this for a second. What does it mean? What does the Gemara say when that a person now marries respect to Talmud Chacham until he tries to benefit, until the Talmud Chacham tries to benefit from him? Then he loses his respect from him. Bear in mind, of course, that what about this answer is not to fit into all the other cases that you mentioned. What about the case of Esther, for example? And she pleads for mercy, and it's supposed to be, she prays for God. They're not holding back.
Well,
anything.
That nothing
will count. Well, that's not an answer.
That is right.
No. It is further true that the bearing of one's soul and the disclosure of how one was repeatedly wrong to another human being is an attempt to obtain sympathy. In an attempt to obtain sympathy is a double-edged sword. But that is very, very true. Because people are extremely tempted in many situations to bear their soul to somebody else, because they need that sympathy. And it is it's a double-edged sword. It's a very, very, you see, very often you're disappointed and you're really upset that you ever did it. In a moment of weakness, sometimes in a moment of weakness where a person has a tremendous need for understanding, they'll say things that he normally wouldn't say in order to obtain a certain immediate reaction, and then the situation does, and then a lot of consequences. You regret that you ever said it. Get one out of control, out of motion. At first, the listener may be compassionate. In the presence of the pleader, his emotions are softened. But when he leaves, his mind ruminates other thoughts of a contrary nature. Is this person truly a victim? Are all those who wronged him blameworthy? Perhaps this person is the cause albeit unwittingly, of his own downfall. In Agav Erecha, philosophically speaking, the Rambam, in the next chapter on the evils, he says that there are three causes. The main cause is the evil that a person brings upon himself. Whereas most cases of evil that occur in the world are caused, he says, by how people make mistakes. And it's really self-induced. Then, of course, they don't want to face up to that, so they blame the world and they're a victim. Such thoughts and others like them preoccupy the mind of a former listener. The high esteem that was accorded the pleader is questioned and seriously reduced. When Joseph bared his soul to the chief butler, he destroyed the idealized image the latter had of him. Joseph removed himself from the pedestal he formerly occupied in his mind. The butler instead saw a man in need of his favor, one who was wronged by many individuals. Were those who supposedly betrayed him, his family, and his master's house totally to blame? Questions arose in the chief butler's mind about Joseph's true worth. His former high estimation was replaced with a low evaluation of Joseph. This is clear from the report the chief butler subsequently gave of Joseph to Pharaoh 2 years later, as stated in Genesis 41:12. And there was there with us a young man, Nahar, a Hebrew servant to the officer of the guard. The rabbis point out that the chief butler was belittling Joseph by these introductory remarks. The term Nahar, meaning youth, carries with it a connotation of foolishness. The word Hebrew implies that he is not one of us. The term servant or slave further indicates one of lowly status. Joseph had committed a faux pas, a political indiscretion. What Joseph is making is that what Yosef did, he's applying this to everything, not just to the statement that I was told, but apparently to the entire thing. The entire request for a favor he's saying is wrong, and that's brought about the downfall. Of course, now the next thing he has to do is to show how this partakes of the what the cause was. How this partakes of the Avera of putting your faith in flesh. That's the next thing he wants. What was the cause of Joseph's blunder? In the theology of Yahadus, every error is to be traced to some human imperfection. The Torah being all-embracing leads one to be wise, to act judiciously. If one does not act so, he is not in harmony with its principles. Where does the imperfection that led Joseph... Okay. The rabbis trace it to a lack of faith, bitachon. In the words of the Kirgum Yerushalmi, Joseph abandoned the heavenly kindness, that kindness which accompanied him from the house of his father. How did he abandon it? The answer is straightforward. He sought human compassion. He was lonely, estranged from every society he knew, even that of the house of his master. In a moment of weakness, he sought the compassion of a human being, the chief butler. Joseph bared his soul to him, looking for the satisfaction and sense of security one receives when eliciting human compassion. He thwarted his own goal because of this momentary need. He unwittingly sabotaged the one element he had in his favor, the chief butler's idolization of him. In the words of the Targum Yerushalmi, Joseph abandoned the chesed d'le'el, the compassion of the above, the true compassion of God, which had been with him from the day he left his father's house. The compassion which sustained him while he was alone all those years in a strange land. He reached instead for human compassion. Basar Aved, created flesh that tastes of death. The sense of stability that man projects is illusory. Man is a created being who has a very transitory and fragile existence. Put not your trust in princes, nor in the sons of man, in whom there is no salvation. His breath leaves him, and he returns to his earth. He cannot offer the security man seeks when he is in need of compassion. The security man offers is illusory. It is supported by the senses, not by the mind. Man's task is to rise to the world of reality, a world beyond the senses, one which is known only by the Tzelem Elokim, the divine part of his nature, his mind. On this plane, man realizes the only one who may turn to seek compassion, is the source of all reality, the only eternal being, God. Failure to rise to this level of existence is catastrophic for man. Joseph's momentary lapse from the world of true reality to the world of the senses and the emotions cost him 2 years of his life. Had he possessed bitachon through faith, he would not have failed. His success was ironically imminent. The figures may take a more radical stance than they're not. Max, as I understood it, was saying that the quest itself made sense. That was the correct maneuver to try. You have to try and do whatever you can. However, the way he went about it was wrong. And now that we've read what Rav Tate said, we know that the nature of the mistake, it wasn't just lacking political understanding, it was rooted in a certain defect. Okay? But let's be mafia though. I mean, it's very complicated because it's very subtle. The whole thing is extremely subtle to see that what Yosef did constitutes, and you can't have any opposite of anyone. There's no favorites over here. Something that seems to us to be construed as one of the worst of Eros. In other words, the loss of the tough and God. So you see that we have a totally different concept. It's not the simple pious idea of the tough and God that we have. It's very subtle. I mean, it turns out that a person returns to another person for some ordinary human compassion, in a certain sense, he's really violating principles of the moon. The Jewish community at large does not look at this, look at life this way. Oh, they're looking for a person who's warm and feeling and compassionate. You know? And you're supposed to be warm and compassionate. You're supposed to be that way, too. When money comes to your door, you're supposed to be not just giving money, but you're supposed to give understanding and right? Support and compassion. And this is a very far-reaching point. He's saying because he saw his compassion, that itself was a deviation from the type of attitude he should have had to God. Something like this. That for starters, the case of Esther, that would not be a violation. She's appealing for compassion because that's realistic. That's what's needed now. What we need. No, Jeffrey, that was a rational thing to do. That was planned emotionally. That's why she's praised for. She took 3 days of fasting and preparation and so on and so forth, and you see that she disagrees with Mordechai's plan. Mordechai said just to go and pray yourself before the king. And she thought that, she thought that wasn't a good idea. She had it all worked out. So then at a certain point in time, then she made the choice. You see, it wasn't just a natural or spontaneous thing. She just acted out her emotions. But the point is that you evaluate the situation. What was needed now was the compassion of this person. So now the question is, what is the most rational way to effectuate that compassion? To bring about that compassion. That's not relying. She was relying on God. But that's what reason dictated was what was needed to do in the framework of the natural order. Okay. The problem over here was that this was a deviation, this was a mistake. here was an irrational it was an irrational action, and the cause of that was the inability to rely on rationality, on what the mind dictated, and which was overcome by the need, the momentary need he needed the compassion personally. She didn't need the compassion personally. It was an object of faith to say to remove the edict. She's dealing with a person who's only going to move because he's effectual. Like the criticism of the Jews during the Holocaust, that they didn't do enough. And when the Gadolim did go to Washington, they made their appeal. They sat there and they cried. And from Mordechai did, like you tried to offer Gadolim Mara. He screamed a bitter and loud scream. That's the rational thing to do. That's what you're supposed to do in that situation. That's what the Rav criticized the Jews, that they didn't. They didn't go like Mordechai. They should have gone out in the streets and screamed a loud and bitter wail and to wake up the conscience of America. And then you have to appeal for that. Some people are only going to stop the killing if you create a powerful emotion. That's the rational thing to do. Of course, that doesn't mean that you're not faith in God. Of course you know that your efforts are not enough and you pray to God. But you pray to God that He will bring about the fulfillment of your plan, which is a rational plan. But the problem over here is that Yosef, according to Roche, his plan wasn't rational, it didn't make sense. It's far from thinking. There was a conflict between his thinking. And he made a mistake, and that mistake was due to the fact that he couldn't sustain that faith in God. If his faith in God was perfect, then he would not have acted the way he acted. That's what Roche is saying. Of course, what we have to analyze is, I think we should return to that premise, because he's convinced that had he said nothing at all, that seems very hard to take, though, I think, emotionally. Because emotionally, what Max was willing to concede was that he should have made the request but made it differently. Okay, Rabbi K is saying no, that he sabotaged himself because he made the request. Had he not made the request, he would have been out of there. That, I think, we'll return to and analyze some more. But the underlying point, how this is a violation and when it is appropriate. Now, what about a person that just found the need for compassion? He bears them every day for, mice and bacholio, everybody. Get a friend, marry by it, you're criticized if you're not sensitive. Your wife wants you just to talk out of, right, her problems, even if you're the one invited. Sometimes people say, look, I don't know. I told her what to do. I don't know what to do. What do you want from me? So I said, I just wanted someone to listen to me. Can you just listen? That's usually the way it works. Men are more geared towards the practical when it comes to these things. Men are more geared towards the practical. I mean, if you're discussing the problem, they'll try and help with the solution. That's like giving the solution to them. And women are more, geared towards just listening. I just need someone to talk to, listen, a sympathetic ear. Okay. So I think we all recognize, it's not necessarily men or women, I mean, there are times when men just need that same listening. Someone to listen and to empathize with you and to feel a little bit better. And I don't think you regard that as being a violation of your relationship to God. The question we're asking, so what's the point of Nicham Avelim and Zika Cholim and all that? The real thing is to go there and just to feel his pain. You get on the floor with him and you sit with him. Or you go to where you visit him, you're not helping the guy, but it takes away your 60% of his illness. Now, why? Because you feel his pain. We distinguish yesterday between what Yosef did, the attempt to elicit compassion. And the Roche said that he needed human compassion. We said that we distinguish between that in the case of Esther, where she prayed, or in the case of the Yaakov, where he seeks to elicit very successfully the compassion, the love of his brother Esau in that situation. So we said that in those cases, that was the rational thing to do. It wasn't that Esther needed compassion. But they analyzed the situation, they saw what the factors were, and he was in a position to save the deed, and given the nature of the person, he was the kind of person that would act on the basis of his emotions. In fact, that was the criticism. The rough criticized the American Jewish during the Holocaust for not using that technique of going out in the streets like a Marathai, to offer the Dolu Mara, to scream a loud and bitter scream. See? Because that's a defect also. A lot of times either people are afraid, or they don't want to show their emotions, or they don't want to appear that way. That can be a defect too. I mean, sometimes you have to give up your own ego, because it's unpleasant to appear in that manner, in that light, and cry. People don't want to be seen crying. But the Gedolim, when they went to visit the powerful people in Washington, they just broke down and cried. They didn't have that pride. They just that was their. It doesn't mean to say that they felt that. I'm sure they felt that way about what was happening. But even if they hadn't felt that way, that was a rational course to evoke a tremendous sympathy, because they're not dealing with philosophers here. They're not dealing with great ethical people. They're just. Why is it necessary? Why don't you just present what's happening? That this is the worst atrocity imaginable, the execution of innocent people. Wiping out a race. I mean, why would it be necessary? You have the power. You have the power to stop it. Why would it be necessary to get involved in theatrics? the fact that it's getting necessary shows a tremendous defect. That's a separate story. I mean, we can go into it in a different context. What this teaches us about these are good people. This is America. This is Roosevelt. This is the person whom the Jews idolized, basically. Okay, I'm sure you asked about what, 90% of the Jews vote, that type of thing. That's the answer. Throughout. Before, during, and after. Now that the Jews are... See, the Jews haven't given up on the Democrats. You'd have thought that they would just renounce all Democrats. No, they got two, and the Democrats always have the Jews vote. That's a separate one. We'll take it up in a different context. Okay. So we said that if that is what the situation requires, then it's a rational thing, and then it's the correct thing to do. But in the case of Yosef, what Rashi was saying is that it was not the rational thing to do. So why did he do it? He did it out of a personal need. And that is a serious defect because if a person feels weak and insecure, that is the very factor which causes him to turn astray from the true, that's the problem, from the true source of security. The true source should always be a kind of marvel. That's what motivates people to turn to superstition, to crazy. I'm not putting Yosef in that category, obviously, but I mean, to the extent that he sought that same emotional gratification from a human source, to that extent he was deviating. And Chazal are very critical of him. In fact, that Chazal was saying that he was Pana El Rahavim, I mean, he was turning to plot. They're not saying that Avodah Zarah, but it's in that framework, it's that turn away from God. And therefore, Rabbi Chaim's position is that therein lies his chait. That the bearing of the soul was not part of a rational strategy. The bearing of the soul was a need for the comfort that he would get from the Sar Hamashkim, from a human source. And that is punishable. He should have relied on not to rely on man, but the same source of, you know, Chesed, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what he trusted in from day one. He always relied on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and acted accordingly, but never placed his faith in any human source. So to make that a change, that therein lies the faith. That's why I take the interpretation. I think it's a brilliant analysis of what's going on in there. I don't think you can really disagree with that. I don't see any way out of that one. Well, I said that this applies to everybody. That the person that gets up in the morning, right, and, on the way to shul, he stops off and visits somebody, he visits a friend before, right? So what are you going to say? It's a bummer. It's like building a bummer. Don't put your faith in man. Keep a man who next time. What is he worth? Don't leave a man, leave a bummer. He's a fucking idol. We used to say that in the morning on the way to shul. No, this is the time of the day when you're concerned about your needs. So you say you want to visit a guy because you want to get his favor. So you go to him before you pray to God. That already indicates that, practically speaking, well, that's the world. It's the world, and people go through the motions, they doubt him, but there's an opportunity to meet, you know, some wealthy sheikh or a doer. I mean, you know, let's face it, when a person is on a plane ride, and just by accident or whatever, he happens to be sitting next to some really important, there was this guy, Bill Gates, right. I mean, anyone they talk, and he was interested in me, and he wanted to keep in touch. And you see, that's like a fine kind of gold mine thing. I mean, a relationship with him, I mean, a person, it's like the greatest thing. You sat next to Rosh Hashiva, and he explained a complicated idea. I don't think a person would be excited about it. He may say, you know, again, if he would tell it over, it would only be because of the fame of this person. So again, it's like name dropping, you know, like, so again, it wouldn't be for the feel good. Okay. Question, we're done with the question. For people, we know in this Maisim Choyam, I mean, seems that a person needs a friend or someone to confide in, to bear a soul to. Is there anything with that? Well, first of all, practically speaking, is that a good idea? Is that a good idea? To bear your soul to others. And secondly, is there a problem here in terms of your relationship with God? In terms of the idea of Pana El Rahavim. That's what we said. We made the question. We said that the mitzvah is to show compassion to the oppressed. the people in a state of oppression, then you get a Talmud Mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. That's what we say. That's a Talmud Mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So it's a given sympathy. To be cold at a time like that would be wrong. So a person has a need with things that were, man is structured in such a way that he has a need for human compassion, for human sympathy. Man is structured that way, and due to that fact, we have to show. We have to show that compassion. If we didn't, we'd be an oxar. So, how do we resolve it? But yet, to the extent that you're looking for that, what about the other person? And you're catering to that, you're catering to his emotion, which we're saying over here is not a good emotion, because he's looking for something from man. That David was given the choice of punishment when he made the Avera of counting the beauty. So the choice is between being defeated or between a plague from God. So he said, Mitzvah Navi Yad Hashem, Ki Rab Machamav. Let me fall into the hands of God, for his mercies are great. For the Yad Adam Alapola. And in the hands of man, let me not fall. This is the exact opposite of the philosophy of the average person. He's looking for a human source. And that's the whole history of mankind. That's the whole chayt of the ego, but they weren't. They didn't want to be Mitzvah Navi Yad Hashem. So it's too distant. They couldn't relate to that idea. I mean, abstract. But my mind tells me that the abstract source of everything, that's the true good. That has to be God. Yeah, because that's not something I can feel. I can empathize. I'd rather be with the average person. Would rather be with a person. I can treat him. I can work with him because he has a moral. You follow? But that's all. So we add other malapola. Man's sympathy, compassion, we're talking about. Man, human compassion. Good people doing the Holocaust. Democratic Party, congressmen, president, etc. The Jews are being slaughtered 12,000 a day, and they have the capacity to start. They continue the truth. Not only did they fail, they actually thwarted it. That's the real story. These answers are correct. That it depends. I mean, man is an emotional being. And when a person is feeling down and in pain and so forth, so of course, you have to be realistic. I mean, this is not a solution. The solution is not to just go and look for pity. That's not. I mean, when a person is reduced to that, he's basically defeated. The ultimate solution is to try and work out the situation in reality. But God just realizes that man is a emotional being, and there's just times when he's sick, like he's a chola, he needs help. Even the strongest people. And therefore he needs human compassion. That's a and there's nothing wrong with that. A person that would there are people that try to be so independent, or you meet people like that, that act as though they have no desire. They become extremely cold. I think that these people really have a tremendous emotional need, but they've repressed it. Whatever, either they were disappointed or whatever. There are a lot of people that give off the impression that they have no need for your sympathy. They don't care. I don't believe that's true. I think they really do, because you see, they do it with a certain arrogance. Whenever it's accompanied by a certain aggression, a certain arrogance, like they're brushing you off, it's really an inversion of that. They really do have a need, but they've been so disappointed they have to show that they don't. But that's not true. The person should be in touch with his emotions. And that's a natural emotional need. That's not to be aware. I mean, of all the emotional needs, or what about other love? A person has a need for love. That's a natural emotional thing. That doesn't mean to say that the mistake is that you take something which is an emotional need and elevate that into the ultimate value that life is about, as in our society. But so we disagree with that, but we don't deny that it's an emotional need. It has its place. So the question would be like this. The answer would be, as you said, that where a person is down and out and he needs a little help to get back on his feet emotionally, so that is a tremendous mitzvah to show him that effort. But he's not putting his faith on you to change the situation. Okay? But where it's in a context that he's in a situation. Yosef Yosef should not have turned to him. He didn't turn to him for compassion. He turned to him for help. But what happened was that instead of acting realistically, the reality, the emotion of compassion, they distorted it so that, you see, he wanted to make him into the individual that he relied upon. That's something else. In other words, it's the reliance on man. For that moment, he put his reliance on man. In other words, a person's down and out. He's in a hospital. He's feeling dead. He has to unburden himself. He's not relying on you to change his condition. He isn't imagining that because you sympathize with him, he's going to get cured. He knows that that's something else. There's got to be two separate compartments between the two. So a person has to have a friend in life. He's down. He has problems. He has to unburden himself. When he talks to that, he feels better. Now he can go and deal with the reality. So this was complete. So that's appropriate. Yes. But in the case of Yosef, it was totally inappropriate. This is not the appropriate thing. By doing it, by switching to that mechanism, it was guilty of that the crime of Mehunetza, of placing his faith in him. That if I can only win him over, then he'll save me. You see? That was the mistake that he made. Instead of relying on the source of reality and having confidence in his basic principles, that this is the only way to go. That says, God has shown favor with me from the day he took me out of the house of my father, and I acted in accordance with rationality, and I never allowed myself to be deterred from that. See? Now of the year, that emotion, for one reason or another, was out. It's not clear exactly what, at this point in time, that emotion should have overtaken him. What caused him to do this? That's not, right here doesn't go into that. I mean, because, well, why? What happened over here? I don't know. A person has to make a distinction. He has to know, you know, where it's legitimate to, request or to solicit human compassion. Sometimes the person needs it. Sometimes you go chizuk, and that's fine. You get chizuk from other people what happens is when you're down and out, you know, you lose all perspective. Especially with them, you lose all perspective on them. You know, you have a distorted picture that why this is happening, you suffer so much and all that. But then when somebody comes and he talks to you, he gives you a perspective, and then you look at things in a different light. You feel better. You don't feel about the situation as you did before. That's what a person needs. I mean, a person is subjective. Man is subjective. He's limited. And now you need someone to get him back on his feet. That's nothing wrong with that. Then he realizes, you know, I got from him with some. Well, sometimes I feel better now, you know, you thank the person. And now you get back out there and you got to deal with the situation. There's nothing wrong with that. Unless, you see, it's in the context of placing your faith. This is when you begin to relate to another individual in that way, that he's your savior, he's going to make everything okay for you, and you got a problem. So, I mean, that's, you have to face that threat. I mean, even if that person can be turned to, and you found that one person, he's going to make everything okay for you, even if that person should be a Hasidic Rebbe, you've got to say it's from him. What's upon all of him? Because he's the husband. What's the difference? Why is he any different? It doesn't matter. Yahadis does not permit that type of thing. Yahadis never elevates man to such a status. There was none greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. And if that were the appropriate way, then it would have existed Moshe Rabbeinu. It wasn't permitted. Quite the contrary. That idea of deification of a person. That's deification. Deification is when you relate to him. See, these people say, well, we don't know about God. He's already, but yeah, God is God. Yet when you relate to this person in the manner that you're getting from him, what you really should be getting from God, when you're turning to him, when you really should be turning to God, that partakes that partakes of this cake that Yosef is doing too, such for Avraham. I asked her if she wasn't doing anything wrong. God, since God wants us to operate, and if God, that's God's will. If God's will was to just sit back and pray, and there was a case like that, there was a case like that. And what was that case? That was by Yosef. And Hashem, Yilacham Lacham, Yachim Lachamishim. That's it. So you don't have a role to play. But where, that's the exception. In every other case, God commands us to operate within the given realm. Now, then you've got to assess the pressure. If you're in a position of strength, you operate one way. If you're in a position of total weakness, and you have to appeal, and the only way is to appeal to this person who's about to execute you, is to try and make an emotional appeal, so that's what you do. But you're not doing it because you're guilty or lack of faith. I mean, that's the reality. Yeah, you're dealing with a behemoth. You're dealing with a behemoth, and you've got to try and influence the emotions of this behemoth. Nothing wrong with that. That's rational to do. Okay, if you fail to do that because of arrogance, that would be wrong. You're overcome it. The other side, no, but Rashi was saying that had he not said anything at all, and his mistake was that he shouldn't say anything. And I think that the reason why we have a problem is, first of all, how do you know? How do you know that he would have gotten out the other way? It would have been successful. And yeah, because I'll say that he would have gotten out, but he didn't get out because of he was told that's what Chazal was saying. That he really would have gotten out at this point, right? But he was punished because of a Toleh that he made a contingent upon the Tsar Hamas. Yeah, I'm not saying, they don't mean that he asked. He asked him was the right thing, but the way he went about it was the wrong thing. That's what I'm not saying. It wasn't because, in other words, are they criticizing the very action of asking, or are they criticizing the manner of it? It goes on with the question of what Yosef should have done. Right? Can't maintain he should have done nothing. I think that bothers everybody because if that's the case, then the other individual wasn't beholden to you. Can you agree? How do you know that he's going to help you? It's not that simple. It's not that simple to make such a decision. It requires great self-control, and also, how do you know? How do you know he's going to run to Paro? You're saying, so I say the same because it's in the high official is always trying to ingratiate himself with his security. So therefore, the reasoning is that the Tsar Hamashkin would have recommended him to Paro in order to elevate himself. It's obvious. Correct? Now, I don't know that the argument works, so why didn't he do it? He's saying because when Yosef did, he lost a certain respect for Yosef. But, okay, it's true that when Yosef bared his soul, he showed his weakness, and it did cause him to lose a certain luster, a certain respect for him. But among the Mac, why would that prevent, if the argument is that the Tsar Hamashkin would have recommended Yosef for personal reasons, he still would have recognized him as his brilliance. It's just that he's no longer that idealized person anymore. Yeah, but you're saying the motive for him to recommend him to Paro had nothing to do with that. He may have lost his the fact was thinking if he was a genius. So there's two cases. There's one case where he needed an individual, and in any event, this is going to be a question on his mind. Why is he saying this? It's always going to be a question. So what Rashi is saying is that it's smarter not to start giving all these explanations. Because this way the guy will project his own. Or he'll just leave it as a blank. The Tsar Hamashkin. So Yosef clearly erred, right, in bearing his soul and allowing his image to be shattered. Okay? But why was it a fatal mistake? That's what we're asking. Why was it that damaging? And why, if you maintain, let's assume that he would have had this idealized image of him. Why would that have made a difference? Because what would have motivated him anyways would have been self-interest. So who cares now? I mean, you meet many people. You meet a guy sometimes, a guy's brilliant, genius, personality, and you start to project, you assume this guy's an unbelievable person, capable. Then you find out that it's not the case, he's not as strong as he looks. But he's still a growing person. All right? I mean, like you have a doctor sometimes, and you build up an idealized image. Then you find that he's not so idealized. Doesn't mean you're not going to go to him anymore. Why is the one, or I tell you sort of things, that one is dependent upon the other? That's what we have to work out. I think David has the answer. Excellent. It makes sense. I'll tell you why. Because you're depending upon, this is interesting, where we did this. It's a very, very important insight. You have to learn this point and you have to apply it in life. You have to control yourself. No, because when a person does something which really demonstrates his intelligence, then he really wants to make sure that people remember it. He always wants to make sure he gets the credit. And you got to be very careful. That's important, because a lot of times people lose out because they do good things, but they didn't make sure that people find out. You know, there's a certain amount of self-promotion in this world that's necessary. Still, I mean, you can't. On the other hand, if you go about it in the wrong way, you can diminish yourself. And people begin to sense that this person has a need. This person has a need for our approval. You got to be careful about that. Okay? Now, what Yosef, and now I can see clearly that what Yosef did really sabotage himself. I don't know if I intended it the way we're explaining it, but I mean, I think we can explain it but in a way that makes sense. Because our question was that, what's the difference? Well, so now he doesn't have so much respect. But he still recognizes his brilliance. Okay? Yeah. But you have to bear in mind that what he is going to do, he's going to do for self-interest. That is to say, that he's going to bring somebody in to Paro, and he's going to put his reputation on the line. And he's a big man. He's like a presidential appointment today. You recommend someone for a key position, secretary, something which is very, very important and sensitive, and the president relies on you. Because if he has to rely, he doesn't know. He has no way of knowing what he's speaking individually. So, in most of the significant appointments, he's relying on somebody's recommendation. If this person could cause some major embarrassment to the president, turns out that this person has severe, which, by the way, the president did have this problem in the first administration. They made a lot of appointments, and they turned out to have problems in their background. They weren't, it's called vetting. They weren't vetted properly. They knew they weren't investigated. Now, you have to realize that he was just in jail. He almost lost his life. So Egypt was not like today. Today you can make a bad recommendation to the president and you can cause a lot of embarrassment, so then you won't get invited back to the White House. But you're not going to get your head chopped off. Okay, so put yourself back in that context. Power didn't have a tolerance for these types of embarrassment problems. So in order for him to recommend him to Paro for his own self-interest, it's not enough that the guy, that the individual, has this capacity. If he has any kind of defect, you see, so then it can be negative as well. Once the guy, then the guy can, you follow. In other words, once the guy has defects, there's problems associated with the guy, I can't recommend him anymore. There's no gain. That's why Velo Zachar, that's why they used to say it. There's no, in his mind, he balanced it out. If I know a guy, like I met a guy in school, let's say I'm in, you know, I'm in political circles, you know, look, I met a guy in school, this guy's terrific, he's brilliant. And a lot of times, he wanted to, somebody calls up. This happens very frequently. So this is a Muslim hostel. How your behavior affects you in later life. A lot of times, there are guys that they want to know about a certain guy who applied for a job. He gave it to cheer, to snap, and I want to know more about him. But what about politically speaking? Yes. And the truth is, I know a lot of fellows that have been rejected, so to speak, because they give good cheer, this and that, but this guy tends to talk out inappropriately, he doesn't know when to be diplomatic, or he has certain flaws, he doesn't take certain things seriously, he comes in late, he doesn't do this properly, I mean, all different types of possibilities. But then, you can't take a chance with this guy. You can't take a chance. And a lot of guys you'd want to recommend, but you know that this guy, on certain occasions, will just do crazy things. But then you can't take a chance, then you recommend them, something bad happens, and then it goes back to you. So I know that this happens all the time. Now we can understand. We can understand that he would be reluctant. In his mind now, you see how, what Raichet is saying is that the motivation If Yosef were to put this view totally rationally, he would say, what would this guy's motive be to help me? Because I did him a favor, he'll do me a favor? No. He's basically a selfish guy. This guy is interested in his own career. He's not going to do it just because I helped him out now. And in fact, he's basically a person who's involved with the motive himself. And you don't reach those types of positions. So he's not, what does he care? He's not a person of integrity that he has to pay me back. I mean, yes, he can defer that. Therefore, what leverage do I have here? Nothing. It's so easy for him to say, I tried. What's he going to do? He's going to shake the world to get me out of jail? He did it. So he feels a little emotion, and he can always get back to you. You have this many times. Many times you feel a person owes you, you make a request. The person says, yeah, I tried, I called, this, that. And you know very well when a person really went all out for you, and when a person just perfunctorily made it and went through the motions. So you could say, you see? So why would he put himself out with power, make a whole big deal with power? Why make a promo? He just got himself out of jail. Now, the best thing for him to do is to shut up. Why do I want to make a tumble? I mean, is that the way a person would react? Let's think about it. The person was in jail, he was just close to getting killed. They made him in power, removed him in amnesty. Now you're going to go to power for failing? Doesn't make sense. Not the way to go. I wouldn't. I'd be thankful to follow. I'd be very thankful. I'd be very grateful. I'd be very loyal. Right away, you met somebody in jail. So the only way that Yosef could parlay this, you say, this favor that he did for the Tzar Moshkin, would be if a situation arose and it would be in the interest of the Tzar Moshkin. Then he would have a chance. Because the Tzar Moshkin would act for selfish reasons. He should have realized he made the mistake of thinking that someone's going to do it for me. That's the mistake we all make. He likes me, I made an impression, he likes me, he's going to do it for me because he likes me. I don't know why, but he likes me. That's the mistake. Everybody makes that mistake. They always think that the guy likes him. There's something about me that they like. Now, if that is the case, you see, then if you're either you rely on the fact that he'll move for you because of his self-interest, in which case it would be bad if he can't, because you've already shown you there's a problem. This guy's got problems. He revealed to him that he's got problems. He was stolen from his father. This guy's a problem. I don't know what this deal is. It's better if you didn't mention that, because if you didn't mention that, all I saw from this guy was brilliance, and I don't know why he's here. That would be a different situation. He would have left a different impression. Therefore, the Tzar Moshkin would have felt confident that recommending him. But then you have to catch it is, if that's the case, so why do you recommend him at all? But he did recommend him, that's when the situation arose, and power was totally desperate. And it was very limited. You see, he only got out because of that. He didn't get out because he just wanted to introduce him to power. The situation was very desperate. And then you see how he described it. Now, you put him down. In other words, don't blame me. All I'm saying is this guy has an act for interpreting dreams. See? Well, Ray Tate learned differently. Ray Tate learned that's how he really looks upon it. I'm saying no. I'm learning a little bit differently. I'm saying that the reason why... You see, because we're going further, we're elucidating this. I'm saying that the reason why he put him down was not because he expressed his true feelings. Because he was talking to power now. I'm taking along the line of David that now that he was recommending him, he was covering his bases. He was covering himself by saying, he's an Ar, he's an Ivri, and this and that. So, I'm not recommending him to greatness. In fact, what happened was, it was Paro who decided to make, because he changed. Well, whatever, he didn't tell this to Paro. Yeah, I can't make the point, though, that when he went before Paro, he didn't tell us. They wanted to take him out as a prisoner. He got a haircut. He changed his clothing. He came to the Torah. He didn't come like a little Nebuchadnezzar looking for somebody. He came like a distinguished, independent guy. That was important. And he made an impression on Paro. And Paro then elevated him. But you see, the behavior of the Tsar I'm asking, was that he would not recommend it. Now that's an important point, you see. That's a very, very important point. That, first of all, for all the things I mentioned, you have to realize that the behaviors will catch up with you. And that people make the mistake of thinking that it's just a question of my talent, my brilliance, and that's it. Once I have the brilliance, they could be offensive, abrasive. People, the world at large is not that impressed with your brilliance. I mean, unless, look, of course, if it's the kind of brilliance that can make you have billions of dollars, then you could be Perot, you could be, you can do whatever you want, obviously. But most people aren't on that level. And most people do need the acceptance of others. And if you're going to get the acceptance of others, then you've got to conform. And if you demonstrate certain severe types of flaws, you're going to pay for it. No matter how smart you are, because things, I mean, I know myself. I mean, before you take on a guy, you put him in a position of responsibility, and you reflect, yeah, he's making up problems. He's a great teacher in the classroom, but the way he acts, the way he talks to kids, the way he does this, may not be worth it. That's very important. Also, when you're dealing with people, and you want credit for what you did, there's a rational point over there, but it has to be done. You've got to avoid two extremes. You've got to avoid the point of just like, naturally assuming that everyone's going to see how smart you are, whatever it is. On the other hand, you've got to avoid the other extreme of making very obvious that you just need everybody's attention. You need everybody's approval. Everybody's acceptance. That will be perceived as a weakness. So, there's tremendous ideas over here. Maybe that's the thing. We asked the question that he gave the interpretation. As soon as he gave the interpretation, he made it a question. Immediately. That was a little bit hasty, you know, before you even interpreted the second thing. He already got the... I'm not sure if that was the correct thing to do or not. But I mean, he should have sat back and thought it over. He could have waited 3 days. He could have waited 3 days to think it over. There's no need to act that quickly. It does not seem as though he was reflecting on it. It seems to be like an emotion. Because when did he think about this? Before he interpreted, when he first came to him, he didn't know what happened. I mean, look at the storyline. He comes to them, he sees them, they're upset. He didn't think then that he's been asking for a favor. I mean, he had no idea. Then the guy tells him about the dream, right? So then he tells him, then he says, well, look, Tim's run. Then he tells him the dream, right? Now, after telling him the dream, apparently that, the fact that he successfully interpreted the dream, brought out the idea that I should ask him. It was an automatic response to that. The request was an automatic response to the favor. I did him a favor. Now you see, it might have been wiser at that point to pull back and think about it. The story indicates that there was no time between the interpretation of the dream and between Yosef's request to think about it. Now it's analyzed. Just because I did something. True, now it's a new situation. How can I exploit what I did? Instead of thinking about it, how I can exploit what I did, a certain natural emotional thought propelled them to elicit that sympathy. I help you, you help me. And in doing so, he hurt himself. Because had he analyzed it, purely from a logical standpoint, he could have said, what are the chances that this person will do it to me out of chesed? Isn't that an overestimation of yourself? You always are, when a person does something, a lot of times he's disappointed. He thinks he did someone a great favor. All the time. And in your mind, you didn't ask for anything in return. Yeah, but in the back of your mind, you still have a chip. When I need this guy, will come through for me. And then a few years later, you talk to the guy and he's completely disappointed. Hey, you nailed it. I mean, a person always overestimates that factor. What I did for him, and you assume that the other guy will always remember it the way you remember it. And who repaid the favor? Right, now he's once he's got a job, he doesn't need you anymore. No, he did need him. He did him a favor. Now that Yosef was correct. That Yosef was correct, because he was there, he thought he was going to die, you know what was happening, he told him, and he interpreted the dream, and it worked out. That was the total. No. The other guy took himself like that. The other guy said, okay, well, you're right. Obviously, that was important. You know, that's not But the point is, what you're saying is correct, David, that in retrospect, that is the point. As he gets out of jail in his own mind, he's going to say, well, what does it do for me? And he's like, no, anything. That's always the person downplays what he didn't get. I was always innocent. I mean, Yosef didn't play the crucial role. Yosef did not play a crucial role in getting him out of there. He didn't save his life in any way. He just interpreted the dream. So another mistake he made was overestimating the favor, in my opinion.